Good morning. All right, thank you, Nina, for that. Just a reminder, if you have an orange card, the questions for Nina will be on your orange card, and you can give those to me at the break after this next session. So next we have Teresa Major. And she's going to be the yellow card. And I've known Teresa for, I guess, 8 years now. She's a member here at Brownsburg Church of Christ, as well as I am. And she is a mom and a nana, and she was a widow, and she has been remarried. So we're going to hear her story. So thank you, Teresa.
Okay. For a moment, I felt like I was going to be a rock star here. But I think it's going to fall off. But I assure you, I'm not going to sing. So you're safe. It's off. Okay, I'll leave it alone. Good morning, ladies. I'm glad you're all here. When Amber first approached me to speak, which was back in May, I went immediately into panic mode. I tried to think of every excuse that I could think of to get out that sounded believable. Obviously, I wasn't successful. It wasn't believable even to me. But it still took me a few weeks to agree to speak at this. The last 2 months of preparation has been very difficult. It's been nerve-wracking. I've had to think about a lot of things that I really would rather not. I've been sad. I've cried. I've laid awake at night. But it forced me to put my feelings down on paper, which I realize I should have done years ago. But in the end, it's been very therapeutic. Right now, I am completely out of my comfort zone. This won't be an eloquent talk, but it comes from my heart. And if it helps someone a portion of what it has done for me, we both win. I entitled my talk, Riding the Runaway Train. And yes, there can be a light at the end of the tunnel. The last time I stood in front of assembly to talk, I was a senior in high school. That's been a day or two ago. I was to give a speech that I had written on school spirit. Today, I want to take a few minutes to encourage your spiritual spirit. Have you ever felt like your life was following a path that you had lost control over? And you were just along for the ride. I believe if we're all honest, we've all been there. 11 years ago, I told my mother, I feel like I'm on a runaway train going downhill, and I can't stop it. Those words were true. But that train did stop. In fact, it ran head on into a wall. My husband of 29 years was burdened with bipolar type mental issues. He was diagnosed 4 years after we were married and shortly after the birth of our second daughter. Little did we know that this was going to be a lifelong struggle. For almost 20 years, medication kept him functional. 9 months before his death, it was medically necessary to change the combination of medication that he was on because of the side effects that it was causing in his health. For 4 years, I had noticed some changes. But the 9 months preceding his death were a roller coaster that often plunged me into despair. It was common. Several nights, I would go downstairs in the dark and look out the window up into the sky and look at the stars, and I would talk and I would pray to God. I asked for help. I asked for strength. I knew we weren't to be given more than we could handle, but I sure felt like I was at the limit. I prayed to let this nightmare come to an end and the right combination of drugs to be found to return himself to him, to return him to himself and his family. During this time, he took an overdose of pills. 89 of them, to be exact. He wore a CPAP machine, and me being the kind, patient person that I was, he kept taking it off during the night, and it was bugging me, so I got up and was mad and put it back on his face. Had I not, he would have succeeded. I found him the next morning, or realized the next morning, when I tried to wake him and could not, I called 911. They kept him in the hospital for 2 days and sent him home because they had no reason to hold him. I couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that this man, who in all aspects, and many of you know him, knew him, was a humble, kind, gentle man. He loved his family, and he loved God. He was always trying to please or to serve. I just couldn't figure out how he wanted to end his life. He was remorseful that he had attempted suicide. I still hate that word. I don't think I will ever get over that one. Something I need to work on. Outward appearances looked like he had made a turn for the better, although during the last week there were subtle changes. But I truly believe that he had. I had exhausted all my resources to get him into an inpatient facility because of a 6-month waiting list and various other hurdles. Twice before in our life, I just had to take him down to the hospital and sign him in. Because of changes in the medical world, that was no longer an option. We didn't have 6 months to work with. 5.5 weeks after he was released from the hospital, I came home from work and he was mowing the grass. I had a class I was taking and needed to leave in a short time. It had been a long day. I went in, put my feet up on the couch. He came in and just sat there in a chair and stared at me, which frankly freaked me out. And I wanted to know, what is wrong? What, do you need something? What's going on? He just shook his head, got up, went back outside to mow the grass. When I left for my class, I tried to wave. He never would raise his head to wave back at me. About 1.5 hours later, I came home. His truck was gone. His work ID and his glasses were laying on the kitchen counter. I walked in the house, and it just felt eerily quiet. I knew right then something was wrong. But I hoped that he just didn't like what I had made for supper and went to get something to eat. That wasn't the case. He was missing for 3 days. I had no idea where to tell the authorities to look for him. As each hour turned into days, I felt he wouldn't be found alive. And he wasn't. He had succeeded in taking his own life. Death comes in two ways, the expected and the unexpected. Whichever form you are presented with is guaranteed it's going to be an emotional period in your life. Unexpected adds a traumatic shock experience with added issues to process. You can learn a lot about yourself during times like this, and you can apply this to anything that you are burdened with and lies heavy on your heart and your mind. It doesn't have to be just the death of a loved one. Trials take on many forms. Feelings of hopelessness and despair can be common for all. Galatians 6:2 tells us to bear one another's burdens. Ecclesiastes 4:10 says, "For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow." We can't always do that if we don't know one is hurting or suffering. I denied others this opportunity to help me. Some things I learned, I'm not so proud of. Others turned out to make me better. I was unaware I needed to open up to ask for support. I just assumed everyone knew. I gave the pretense that I was doing fine, and I really thought I was. So many people knew the circumstances of his death, local congregations. This, frankly, was an embarrassment, and it was easier to hide. The situation had been so public since his hospitalization that I was ready for the attention to be off of me. The weekend he was missing, news from local preachers had passed from congregation to congregation to request the prayers for him and for our family. Still, after all these years, I cannot put into words what I was feeling. Numbness had taken over, thankfully. Even when I got the call and had suspected the outcome, it was still a shock to the system. It takes time to overcome and to get your bearings again. I actually found relief that the nightmare was over, which brought guilt that I felt that way. I questioned myself. Had I been patient, loving, kind? Had I done everything to emotionally support him? I felt like my feelings and my life was in a pressure cooker. Stress was very high in our home. I'm afraid I failed in many ways. I couldn't understand why God had granted my pleadings for the nightmare to end in this way. It haunted me that he felt so much despair and so all alone that he didn't want to live anymore. I realize now that was the nature of this disease. So many unanswered questions that I'll never have answered in this life. Closure is as good as it's going to get. I didn't really allow myself to grieve properly. Everyone grieves differently. But I knew I threw myself into watching over my girls. I felt if I stayed strong, it would be easier on them, and maybe I could help protect them. My oldest daughter was a new mom, and she lived 1,500 miles away. My youngest daughter was 5 months pregnant with my second grandson. We talked very little about our feelings. Instead, we each retreated into our own shock and grief. It seemed it was easier than facing our true feelings. I failed them in this area. We needed to open up and talk about what we were feeling and experiencing and cry together. I hope to never let them down in this way again. We have Bible examples of grief. when Lazarus died, Jairus' daughter, the widow's son, Lydia, Dorcas, and many others. I read books on grieving. I based my progress on what was written. I relied on coworkers and friends outside the church to help get me through this period. Excuse me. That's better. I had a job that helped keep my mind off of the trauma. I spent more hours of my week with these people, and we were friends outside of the workplace. And they knew only what they could observe or what I shared with them. Not like my local church family, where I didn't share. All I shared was that I was fine. I spent a lot of time by myself or with my new young grandson. He was my little heart healer. So much of the healing process you have to go through yourself. No one can do it for you. I actually found that I like my own company. I've always been one who likes to have alone time. I grew weak in my spiritual life. I started missing services on Wednesday and Sunday evenings. I justified it that no one ever checked on me anyway, and sad to say, they never did. I was irritated when members who lived a few blocks away never checked to see if I needed help with mowing the grass, snow, or other upkeep items on a house. Thankfully, a couple of my neighbors did. I realized some of this was my own doing by proclaiming I was fine. My conscience started bothering me that I chose to miss services. And I knew I needed to get back in the company of Christians. Looking back, it'll be 11 years this Labor Day weekend. I'm glad to say I did make it through those trials. There actually was light at the end of that tunnel. I found I did have the strength to make it day by day. That I can humble myself to talk to others who have experienced life trials. And I found God still has a plan for me. I am stronger because of this trial. 2 Corinthians 12:9, boast of my weakness so the power of Christ can work through me. James 1:3, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. I give thanks and the glory to God. Luke 2:20, glory and praising God for all things. He brought me through the fire and has blessed me and brought me a Christian man that helps encourage me every day of our lives. As I prepared for this talk, he told me, you have a story to tell. Just tell it. Up until now, he is the only one who knew my thoughts and feelings during this time, and now I have shared them with you. I'll leave you with this thought. I read in a daily book called Jesus Calling. I'm sure most of you have the book. It's great. Anticipate coming face to face with impossibilities, situations totally beyond your ability to handle. This awareness of your inadequacy is not something you should try to evade. It is precisely where I want you, the best place to encounter me in my glory and my power. Thank you.